This is Jeremiah Tessier. On today's episode 1 of Psychoanalytic Voices, we are talking with Dr. William Sharp about applied psychoanalytic therapy in the school setting. And in relation to that, why psychoanalysis as opposed to other forms of therapy?
Behaviorism has its place in the sort of psychological hierarchy, and it has obviously some effects, but what's the difference with psychoanalysis or, you know, those kinds of psychotherapy? Where can you see a difference?
Well, let me give you two kind of answers to that. One is the thing I really like about modern psychoanalysis and Spotnitz's idea is that basically you can use any intervention, and the any intervention that's in your toolbox, as long as it basically is leading to some form of progressive communication, as long as whatever you've said helps the person say something that now leaves you with a deeper understanding or a new understanding of the person that you're with. And so I love that idea, because I've done many interventions that people would look at and would say, oh, but that sounds like a behavioral intervention. But the difference, I think, is that theoretically I'm coming at it from trying to understand behavior, whereas true behaviorism, the most radical type of behaviorism, is really about changing behavior.
Yeah.
It's not really about understanding. And a lot of times behaviorism, the person who's trying to put a plan together, doesn't even do a great job of getting baseline data, which you really should if you're doing good behavioral work. But I'm interested in understanding what's going on, even though I may...
What does the behavior say, kind of?
So one thing that happened, I could think of a classroom I was doing a social skills group in, and one week the teacher said, you know, I really need your help with the class. We have a problem with people running to the cafeteria. And I'd say, well, say a little bit more about that. And she said, well, you know, every day we go down to the cafeteria, and by the time they get to the cafeteria, they've started running through the hallway, or they end up running through the cafeteria to get in the line, and people sometimes even get pushed over, or things can get knocked off of other people's plates, and it's just dangerous, so we can't have that. And so I've told them that they can't run. We've put in line leaders so that the, you know, they're supposed to follow the line leader and they can't run past the line leader. We've had the principal come in and yell at them. We set up a system where I said if they walked to the cafeteria for 4 days, on the fifth day we would have a pizza party. I said if they walked to the cafeteria and then they started running, they would end up losing their recess time. So
they tried everything under the sun.
This teacher had tried every trick in the book. And so in the, you know, this was all happening in the beginning of our social skills group. And so I looked around the room at all the kids who were, you know, doing what they individually all did when they knew they were getting in trouble, which is what this felt like. And I said, so what's up? And they looked at me and they didn't say anything. And I said, well, what's up with running down the hallway? And again, they just kind of sat there because they thought they were going to get in trouble. They didn't quite know that what I really wanted to know is, no, I want to understand. Why are you running down the hall? Like, I'm curious about it. And finally, one little girl raises her hand, and I say, yeah, Susie? And she said, if we don't get to the cafeteria first and early enough, they run out of hot lunches and we have to eat peanut butter and jelly. And this was an inner city school setting, and for some of these kids, lunch might very well be their only hot meal that they're gonna get that day. And so they do not want peanut butter and jelly.
It's they probably didn't have breakfast. You're rushing to get to school. And
Exactly, so this was huge for them. And you know, I could see the teacher's kind of mouth drop, and she put herself back together and she's like, I asked you before why you were running and you never told me this. And I had a good relationship with her, so I looked at her and I said, I know, but you probably asked that way, and they know that that's yelling. That's not really asking. It's not a real question.
It's an expression of feeling.
Yeah.
I wish you wouldn't run.
Yeah. Why are you running?
Yeah.
Is very different than
what makes you run?
What's up with running?
Yeah.
So the teacher, you know, to her credit, was able to say, okay, so here's the problem, you know, that we take a long time getting ourselves together. Mm-hmm. We probably are one of the last ones to get in there. And so she decided that they were going to start getting ready for lunch 10 minutes earlier. And they got, everybody got stuff out of their cubbies, they set up the line leaders, and they were able then from there on to walk to the cafeteria, and that never was a problem again. And that's the difference, I think, really, be trying to change the behavior, which is what they were doing before with the pizza party or losing recess or getting lectured about what you should and shouldn't do or the dangers of running. The teacher also, just to kind of say, like, you know, the place for all these things, the teacher also was able to affect the social system by going in and saying to the principal, look, they're running out of hot lunches. It's really important that all of the kids be able to have a hot lunch.
It's reminding me of something that I think is special about psychoanalysis, which is that we assume the patient or the kid is doing their best, almost, that their sort of symptom is like their best way of navigating the world, right? Mm-hmm. The behaviorism is maybe not explicitly, but is almost saying, you got it wrong. If you did this, it'd be better. But we kind of take a different approach and say, you know, there's probably a good reason. It might be affecting things, it might be destructive, but there might be a good reason underneath.
Yeah, and along the same line, it's about are you just treating the symptom or are you treating the underlying cause? And a lot of times with any kind of other technique, behavioral techniques, even sometimes cognitive interventions, we just reset how somebody's thinking about something or what somebody's doing with the feeling, but the feeling hasn't gone away. And whatever the understanding of why that feeling is happening at this particular moment hasn't gone away. Mm-hmm. But it's going to end up coming out somewhere else.
Yeah.
I've had a couple different degrees and a couple different jobs, but the thing that really helped me land with psychoanalysis was that I see it actually working long term, and that it seems to really help people change things about themselves that they ultimately want to change. Mm-hmm. Not that something that somebody else wants them to change. So I think of the work that I've done in the schools in the area, and how very often we see schools get pushed, and limited funding leads to having to go with programs that ultimately just give you the basics. So what we see in a lot of schools are behavior modification or token economy systems. None of this stuff is new. I mean, Skinner's ideas have been around forever.
That was his thing.
Yeah. And that, you know, if you behave this way, you collect so many coins, and once you have so many coins, you can cash them in for something in the school store. And that works for probably 80% of the kids. There are that group that it doesn't work for. Mm. And it does change their behavior, but does it actually do anything to promote emotional growth or social and emotional learning? Probably not, because that requires making mind. And I think that's what I've seen in my experiences with psychoanalysis. People actually get a chance to slow down, they reflect on what they're doing, and that just grows mind, and it grows a space between the impulse or the feeling that you might have from the unconscious and turning it into action. It gives you a chance to catch it, think about it, and then maybe make a different decision as opposed to repeating the same thing compulsorily that you've done up until that point.
What have you seen or even done in the schools that has worked, and you've thought, oh, this this really worked better than this economy system that is just getting teachers frustrated or kids frustrated?
One of my favorite things to do when I walk into a room with a kid, I'll just say something like, what's up? And I think it's funny, you can almost see them searching, and I imagine what's going on in their mind is, well, what does he want? What's the right answer? What am I supposed to say in this situation? Because that's what schools have conditioned them to do.
They want an answer. Or
exactly.
The right answer.
There's obviously a right answer. Yeah, not only just an answer, but the right answer.
They're searching for it.
Yeah, and you can see them. And when you ask a question like, what's up, it takes a while for them to realize, I really want to know what they want to talk about. I don't have an agenda. They can talk about whatever. They can use their time however they want to. And I'll ask some questions, you know, and I'll ask maybe how things were connected and why things happened the way that they did, but I'm not there to teach them. Mm-hmm. I'm not there to parent them. I'm really to help let them say whatever it is that currently they don't have any other space to say.
Yeah. It sounds like you really go with where they're at rather than trying to get them somewhere where you think they should be at.
Maybe. Yeah, and I think this is often, you know, with all the students that I've worked with and with people who are new in the field that are doing supervision, you know, there's always this question of, well, do we really have goals or do we not have goals mm-hmm. in psychoanalysis? I land on the side of we really do have goals,
of course.
That there's something that we're working towards. Now, in the most simple way, I think, it's having people be able to put their thoughts and feelings into words.
Mm-hmm.
And in the schools, we see that kids don't get a chance to practice that very much. So it's exciting to get them to learn that, oh, I can, instead of just getting in trouble and acting out, I can actually say, oh, I'm really mad at someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story that comes to mind is I was working with a teacher who had a kid that bit. It was just a biter. And there's one in every preschool class. And the teacher's like, I don't know what to do. And we've tried behavior modification and we've talked to the parents and we've talked to him and none of it works. And I said, one thing that you might want to try is ask the kid if he has the impulse to bite someone when he comes into the classroom. Ask him, who are you going to bite today?
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher was like, well, I can't ask that. I can't give them permission to bite. And I'm like, you're asking a question. You're not giving permission to bite. You're asking a question. You've already established that every day this kid bites someone. So just say, who are you going to bite today? And when the kid says, I don't know, which is very likely what they're going to answer, because in the moment they're not
they
frustrated.
Don't really know. Yeah.
They don't know. Then you can just plant a little seed to say, look, when you know who you're going to bite, before you bite them, could you tell me?
Mm-hmm.
Because now that little seed is there, and later on in the day when Susie really starts to frustrate Joe and Joe would normally just bite, Joe might have a chance of catching himself and go up to the teacher and say, you know, Susie isn't playing fair or Susie's not giving me a turn and I'm going to bite her.
Mm-hmm.
And then the teacher has a chance of helping at that point explore options. Whereas if the deed's already been done and the feeling's already gone, there's nothing, you don't have as much to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But planting those seeds and just kind of helping the kid grow mind, I think is really important.
What do you think helps that seed take hold or, you know, stick there
mm-hmm.
and affect the kid?
On one level, it really is just repetition. You know, sometimes you might have to do the same intervention 3 or 4 times before, you know, Joey gets it
mm-hmm.
or until you're able to actually see something change. And I think that's one of the disadvantages of this kind of work is that sometimes you may be working with somebody mm-hmm. for 2 years, and in the room, in the therapy room, they're not changing too much. But then all of a sudden, all these things outside of the room have started to change, and then they start reporting on that. So that's exciting. But the actual dynamics, I think repetition, I think helping the person just in the 50 minutes that you're sitting with them, slow down. Neil Altman's book is Psychoanalysis in the Age of Accelerated Cultural Change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we're in such a unique spot in as a culture where everything is so fast
yeah.
and happening so quickly. To actually be able to have 50 minutes where you're just supposed to talk, and the analyst is going to help you when you need a little bit of prompting, mm-hmm. but the analyst isn't going to fill the time themselves. That's so unique. Nobody gets it. And
that's
a chance for you to be with yourself. It's a chance for you to reflect on what you're saying because you probably hear it for the first time.
Mm-hmm. They're in a new light.
In a new light, unadulterated, not interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And you take things to... So I think all those... like the actual session itself is structured in a way that it promotes... growth of the mind.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, then Winnicott had a paper or something, How to Be Alone with Yourself or mm-hmm. something to that degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's reminding me of that. on the note of the teacher's story, though, did it end? Did she try out the...
She did try it, and it did work. the kid... I've said I've used this with a number of teachers because there are a number of biters out there.
It's a classic problem in the classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she said that, yeah, she was able to get the kid, and the kid was able to come to her and say, I'm going to bite so-and-so.
Uh-huh.
And she was able to intervene and actually help the kids... tell Susie, you know, I'm mad at you that you're not mm-hmm. playing fair. And Susie was able to adjust her behavior and they got along much better and nobody got bit. I think that you also can have new emotional experiences mm-hmm. in an analysis that you don't get outside. And you were mentioning Winnicott, so that always comes,
yeah,
you know, that kind of idea comes to my mind. And, you know, I can think I've worked with a number of kids who also really come in saying, I just don't want to go to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to be here. It's my parents who need to be here.
They're being forced to go.
No reason
of their own.
And this happens, you know, I've seen it a lot where it almost like therapy is punishment, which mm-hmm. is such a difficult place to start in as opposed
yeah.
to seeing therapy as like a gift. Like, this is great. I mean, I have 50 minutes to myself to do what I want to do and say what mm-hmm. I want to say. But it's used as a punishment very often. And with a lot of those kids, I've found that I can give them a new experience by when they come and they say, I don't want to be here. My parents should be in therapy. There's nothing wrong with me. Everybody else in the world is the problem. I can say, well, don't come to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And they just look at you because it's the first time somebody hasn't tried to cajole them, tried to force them mm-hmm. into doing something that somebody else is determined is good for them. And they'll look at me, and I've had many different types of responses to that question, but the you know, some kids will be like, well, but I'm gonna have to come because they're making me come. And then we have kind of a level playing field where I can say, well, look, if you're gonna be forced to come, then why don't we figure out how you wanna use the time
mm-hmm.
and you can get something out of it. And it's so different than forcing them
for sure
into doing it. You know, I had one particular case where I can think of is the kid was convinced that if I would just give him a letter then saying that he was a good kid, he would not have to continue
yeah.
in therapy. And so we did session after session of him bringing in versions of letters, where I realized not only was the problem some of his feelings that were getting in the way of him growing and being working with his parents, but he was terrible at English. So we'd make corrections on the letters and punctuation and spelling, and you know, I'd send the letter back and he'd come back the next week with an edited letter, and mm-hmm. we went through this for a number of period of time. And I wouldn't sign the letter because I was like, look, I've got this degree. I can't just sign the letter until we actually have something that is decent that I can put my name on. And he finally said, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to have to keep coming. Just sign the letter. So once I had that, I signed the letter for him. Because again, I want them to have the feeling that this is their space.
Yeah.
And that although other people may be appearing to creep in, my job as a therapist is to keep the other people out
mm-hmm.
and work with the person who I'm with so that they can leave the room and work with the people who are outside of it.
Mm-hmm. So the kid you said, then don't come, did he keep coming? Or was
yeah.
that the kid with the letter? Or
he
a different
came,
kid?
Yeah, that he that came for years. Well, there have been a number of them. You know, one who did say, okay, great, I'm not coming anymore, and she left, and about 3 or 4 weeks later, I got a call back from the parent who was like, okay, she's only willing to come and see you now. They had taken her a couple other therapists who, you know, therapists, I think, from a place of really wanting to help kids, will try to convince them and say, well, this is
for
why
sure.
you could come to therapy, and
the
merits of it, and that therapy is a gift, and all those things, which I believe are true.
They're
but
definitely true.
When somebody yeah. comes in and they're saying, I don't want to come, mm-hmm. I'm being forced to come, don't be another adult
mm-hmm.
who's trying to force them to come.
That's not the kid's perspective of it at the moment. And
yeah, it's
know.
not gonna get you anywhere.
No.
You're fighting
enough.
If it
was that easy, there wouldn't be therapists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. everybody could do it.
Yeah.
But I do like working with kids. And then the thing that became really interesting is in working with adults, you realize there's just the same thing in them. They've still got their kid selves and their kid personas and their kid way of thinking and places where they haven't really developed mm-hmm. like they should have. And so once you've got working with kids from a psychoanalytic perspective down, then you can start working with the adult who has that kid in them who needs a little bit of time to talk and to have all their thoughts and feelings. Mm-hmm. And